Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining. Is it time? Deciding to change careers or stop working? Your host for today is Mr. Steve Nesson. You may begin.
Thank you so much, Alma. Good evening, everyone. As Alma stated, my name is Steve Nesson, and I am the Senior Director of Employment Programs at the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C., and I would like to welcome you all to the second call in our 2013 Employment Teleconference Series. We would like to start off by thanking Robin Kemper for her sponsorship of this teleconference series. Joining me on this evening's call as our hosts are Barbara McKeon, who's the Director of Employment Programs and Services with the New York City Southern New York Chapter, and Christina Forrester, who's the Employment Services Manager for the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter. Please know that this evening's call will be recorded and will be available to you at the end of the call series. Tonight's topic, Is the Time? Deciding to change careers or stop working, is something that many people grapple with at some point of their working life. We know that multiple sclerosis can alter a person's career path, and our speaker will share things to think about in assessing your employment options. We do know that this is a very individualized decision to make, but hopefully you'll get a sense of what to look for and how to proactively think about the role that work plays in your life and the potential impact that your multiple sclerosis has on your ability to continue working in your chosen profession. After our speaker has completed his formal presentation, there will be time for your questions. Please do jot down any questions that you may have during the call so you are prepared to ask them during the Q&A period. Be sure to ask your questions completely, as we will be muting your line once your question is posed. This will allow us to get to as many questions as possible. At the conclusion of the program, Barbara, Christina, and I will give you our contact information, so you can forward any additional questions to us, and we will do our best to get them answered. Also, at the end of tonight's call, we will be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate this program. This is a short survey of only 6 questions, so please, if possible, do stay on the line until the conclusion of the program. We are always interested in receiving your feedback. So our speaker for this evening's program is John Karnasecki. John is the founder and director of a human services private practice located in New York City. He is a psychotherapist, certified employment assistance provider, career, and leadership coach. The premise of John's practice is simple. It is about one person helping another person to create balance and fulfillment in life and in work. His training and experience are from several institutions, including New York University, Mount Sinai School of Medicine, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Clove Lakes Healthcare Rehabilitation Center, the U.S. Air Force, as well as the National MS Society. He has 17 years of experience working with people and families affected by multiple sclerosis. During that time, he held roles at the National MS Society as an individual and a group therapist, a national employment coach, and the program director for vocational services. John, I will turn the floor over to you.
Thank you so much for inviting me to speak to you guys tonight. I always like to start with why MS entered my professional life. And it was a personal reason. 22 years ago, I was a friendly volunteer at a rehabilitation center on Staten Island, and I would visit patients, and it was just a volunteer activity. And one of the first people I met was an older woman who was affected by MS, and she touched me. She touched me personally because I was taken by how she didn't define herself by her condition. And that was probably one of the first experiences outside of my family life, if you will, and as a young person, that really opened my head and my mind and my heart to wanting to know more and wanting to help others. And from that point on, I have really stayed in touch with the MS community and helped out as much as I could. So it's a pleasure to be with you all tonight. The topic we're talking about here is a very, very unique one. because like MS, no employment situation is the same. And whether you're on this call to make your current work be better for you or your career, or change careers, or consider temporarily leaving careers or work, or permanently leaving careers or work. We have a lot of different possible situations that people may be working through right now. So this discussion is going to be a high-level one, a one to give you tools to help you think through next steps. How do we take this complicated situation, the world of work, which we all are familiar with, and our MS? So I'd like to start with an equation that I use often in my practice and in working with anyone, really. And I think it's important that we deconstruct this very difficult topic to more simpler, chewable ideas. And I'm going to refer to my slides that you all have in different order. So they're not really an outline, so don't feel like you have to follow them. I'm going to refer to them as I speak. It's just the way I set it up. So bear with me. I want to look at the workplace fulfillment equation slide in your deck there. And I think this equation should help start guiding us as to what we want from the work life. It equals perceived adequate income plus values plus personality. And everyone's going to have a different weight as to how important each of these sections are and how they feel workplace fulfillment. Some people that I've worked with have said to me, you know, I only need $20,000 a year. That's my perceived adequate income. And my value of monetary things and material things is that. And I've worked with people that are on the other extreme. I need $1 million. So it's very important to look at yourself financially. Look at your needs as an individual, if you're in a relationship with your significant other, if you have kids, pets, mortgages, rent. Create a budget. Understand how you're living, how you'd like to live, and what attach a number to it. And some people have a real hard time with numbers and budgets and stuff. And I always and strongly encourage people to work with a financial planner or to get some easily available books on Amazon.com on creating a budget, an easy budget, to understand what's involved in that perceived adequate income number as a very important piece to the equation. Then we go to values. And people often ask me, how do you define values? And I say it's lasting beliefs or ideals. The definition of values is lasting beliefs or ideals. And I'll give you some examples. And there's some spaces on your little sheet here so you could write it in or keep notes on it. But being social, being environmentally focused, needing recognition, money, accumulating wealth. Those are just examples of some people's values. There's many, many others. But take a moment and think about what your values are and what you'd like to get out of work. And then we have to consider personality. And what is personality? Personality refers to individual differences in one's pattern of thinking, feeling, and behaving. Examples of personality can be that I'm an introvert, or I'm an extrovert, or I'm a moderately expressed introvert, or I'm sociable, I'm an irritable person, I'm detail-oriented, I'm a big-picture personality. Coming up with what your personality is like is very helpful to targeting what type of work is right for you and where you're going to feel fulfillment. Now, I know this equation, I haven't mentioned anything about MS yet, but we're deconstructing the bigger question. And we have to start with the smaller pieces and put it all together, and that's what I'm hoping for as we continue. So on your own time, take time to figure out what your equation is. Then the next thing I like to talk about with folks is really understanding the needs that you have in the work-life continuum. And if you refer to your slides, there's something called Understand Where You Are in the Work-Life Continuum, and you'll see ages and some stages that I wrote out. So this is a very general continuum, but it's helpful because during different stages of our life, we have different needs. Once again, regardless of the MS, we have different needs at these stages of our careers or work. I'm not going to read the slide to you all verbatim, but if you look at it, you'll see that we have, in the beginning, exploratory stage. And during this 18 to roughly 32 years of age, we're kind of exploring. We're having a couple of different jobs, maybe even careers during that time. The average American changes careers / jobs 7 times in a lifetime. I often ask people, how many times have you changed jobs or careers in your lifetime? Exploring is normal and healthy during this time. And then we get to a promotion stage. And during a promotion stage, we often may choose a line or a path that we want to stay on and excel in it and get a deeper knowledge in the content of our work. But with that stage, we may have different needs. Maybe during the exploratory stage of my work life, I don't really anticipate accolades or money, but rather I expect to have deeper understanding of the world around me, like a liberal arts education, like all the different flavors at Baskin-Robbins. And that's my expectation when I'm exploring. But when I'm feeling like I'm settling into a promotable, deeper career path, my needs may change. My value of money may change. My value of recognition may change. Maybe my value of knowledge may even change, too, at the same time. And then there's also the maintenance stage, where we get down to feeling like I'm on a cool path, my needs are being met, I can keep things status quo, and actually meeting my needs. I'm not craving any more, I'm not craving any less. I want to keep it going the way it is. And then we have the winding down stage. Now this is a general, once again, a general work-life continuum, and it changes. Yes, it does change when you tell me you're an entrepreneur. Well, entrepreneurs, and I'm an entrepreneur, I could tell you that I'm always exploring. I always feel like I'm in an exploratory stage. So it's just a little bit of a guidance sheet to help you sit with yourself and say, where am I? And maybe I'm a little bit in this stage and a little bit of that stage. Or, you know, maybe I'm an old soul and, you know, I feel like I'm in the maintenance stage at 35. It's okay. The idea is to get you thinking, where are you? How have your needs changed for work, for employment, now, from 5 years ago, from 10 years ago, to maybe 10 years from now? And that's why I kind of wanted to use this slide, just to get you to think a little differently about your needs. We have to consider MS. We have to consider objectively as possible understanding what obstacles or challenges MS brings you. And as I said in the beginning of the call, MS is uniquely different for every person. We all know that. Physically, how does your MS impact your ability to work? Chronic fatigue, mobility, incontinence, maybe vision loss. Understanding the history of the exacerbations versus a flare-up. What is your history like? How often does it happen? All these sorts of questions, which I have to tell you, I don't always think that people who suffer with any chronic condition are often most objective about how it's really affecting them because they're living it too much. And I often ask people to seek other people's opinions in their life, their trusted life, family, friends, a peer. How do I perform? How do I look in the workplace? What is your impression of me? Of course, this is predicated on whether or not they know you have MS or not. And some people keep that quite private in the workplace. I get that. But not all that feedback about how you present is specifically work present specific. You could ask your neurologist. You could ask your family and friends, partners, and so on. I often say that the hardest thing to really get a handle on are kind of the invisible signs that are involving cognition, thought process, our executive functioning. And if one struggles with memory difficulties, sequencing, gets struggles with details, doing things in the right order, that's what sequencing means. And there may be a hint that there's some cognitive issues going on. I strongly recommend folk considering getting neuropsych evaluations so they can actually see how they're doing on paper and through testing. And it's a very difficult thing to do for many because they're looking at themselves on paper after all the testing, how they're functioning cognitively, but it gives tremendous insight as to giving you objective baselines as to how you could function. So we're trying to understand MS and how it's affecting, how it could affect our ability to work. We also need to think about getting the support around us to make decisions that are difficult. And some people have significant others, but whoever's in your life, it's important to include them when you're about to make a change. If it's going to affect the household, if it's going to affect any children, parity in the relationship with paying the bills each month, things like this. So I often suggest if you get to a point when you're ready to make a decision or thinking through a decision, at some point it's great to invite that person or persons that are really close to you that it may even affect. If we go to the slide on the MS continuum, the MS employment continuum. Once again, it's important to look at yourself and say, where am I on this chart? Now, if you look at the chart, it speaks to job. I'm in a job-ready stage. I'm looking to make a job change, and I've already examined myself, and I know what my needs are, and I need to get a different career, and I'm ready to go into job search. Or I have the MS, and I'm considering possibly exiting. I'm considering taking a break, whether it's temporarily or permanent. And we consider different options like long-term, short-term disability, maybe reskilling, transitional, volunteer work, Social Security disability. When we put it all together, some of the most important things that we need to do is be honest with ourselves. It is hardest to listen to things that are hard to hear. And so seeking support and figuring out what accommodations can be made around my situation so I could reach the goal. Some people come to me and say, I want to work. I want to stay working, but this job is not working for me. I can't be a litigator lawyer anymore. The hours are 80 hours a week. I suffer with chronic fatigue. I need to understand what my other skill sets are so I can continue to be productive. And often I say to someone, I say, well, you know, I understand the situation. Tell me a little bit about how you may have reached for accommodations on the job. How have you tried to make the job work better? And I'm not sure how many people know about the Job Accommodation Network, which is on my recommendations to collect objective data slide, number 6. But they really help people who are considering leaving a career or a job to see if they can be made better by coming up with suggestions as to how to stay at a job and pitching ideas to a manager or an HR department as to how your life can be easier on the job. Of course, disclosing that you have a medical condition. So support is super instrumental with making these big decisions. I have, let's see here. There's a couple of articles that I have attached, and I also added a book referral that I would like to also mention to you all. There's an article on the joy of quitting, and I know that sounds a little funny, because most people think that when they decide to choose to leave work and quit, that they're a failure. I hear that more times than I'd like. And this article kind of puts a different slant on it. It kind of says, when you quit something, you're kind of setting boundaries. You're saying, enough is enough. This is not good for me. I need to take care of myself. It takes courage and a good ounce or two of bravery to admit that to oneself. And so I kind of like this article because it's one of the first articles I've ever read that took a total different spin on quitting. And I thought that would be helpful to include because that may be an option for some people. The other article, it says, does disability have to mean career change and what to consider? And this gives some vignettes. I particularly liked the paragraphs on how disability doesn't have to mean change. It can mean that you're accommodating and you're thinking creatively about staying at work, whether it's working from home one day a week, hump day, so you don't have to commute, or whether you go into work late, or you get an assistive device when you sit in the chair so you're not feeling certain pain in your back. I also liked in the article where it says, do I need to change my work? And it really focuses on what I discussed before about doing an objective needs assessment. That's one of the reasons why I chose this article, kind of summarized nicely. There's a book called The Pathfinder by Nicholas Lore, L-O-R-E. And it focuses on changing and choosing careers with satisfaction in mind. And that's for, you know, folk that want to continue working or change work as well. I just wanted to give those resources out before I forgot. So between the equation for workplace fulfillment, understanding where you are in the work-life continuum, getting objective data from people in your circle of life, healthcare professionals and not, and then bringing it to the MS employment continuum and saying, okay, where am I on this? What do I need to do? What are my next steps if I am going to stay working or decide to exit work? Is a good framework to start this process of strategy in your life. I am going to start taking questions, and what I would ask is that you ask the question as succinctly as possible because I think they're going to mute the call after the question's asked so I can't have a back and forth, and this allows us to answer as many questions as possible. But I purposely wanted to allow ample time to get your question asked. So I think that would be a good thing to start right now.
Great. Thanks, John. Okay, Alma, I think we're ready for questions.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if there's any questions that you would like to ask, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question is from Mary. Mary, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to know how do I contact and start the process about learning a new job if I choose to leave where I am right now?
That's a great question. I know at many of the MS chapters, I'm not sure where you're from, but there are vocational services where people will help you do some assessment as to maybe what your transferable skills are. Transferable skills are skills that you have that lend itself maybe directly to your current work, but can indirectly relate to another type of work. And, you know, that's a really great question. I always like going objective on that again. Once again, it's kind of have someone on the outside sit with you and do some kind of fun assessments to say, hey, what else could I do? And then once you examine that and then plug it into that equation, always go back to that equation. I really go to it a lot and say, okay, I don't know, I'll make this up. I may be a waiter today, but then I'll go and I'll say, well, I want to do something different. I want to be a retail shop owner. And I would need to then equate, say, okay, well, what is the salary of a retail shop for clothes? You know, what am I going to make there? And does it meet my values? I mean, I'm a social guy. I'm entrepreneurial, but, you know, I kind of like to have my own time away from people too, you know. So you go through that equation and say, well, is that going to be right for me? Do I have the ability for that? The assessments will help you with skills. We'll talk about what skills you would need, and then you would examine, well, these skills are math heavy. Am I mathematical? Do I enjoy numbers? You know, and you'll go through that kind of vetting process. So the book that I referred, Pathfinder, is also very good to help you think through that, Pathfinder by Nicholas Lohr. But also I think the MS chapters have some great resources with their vocational services. Next.
One other thing too, John, just to mention in terms of knowing that some chapters do vary in terms of their level of vocational services. Also within each state, there's a state vocational rehabilitation agency that can sometimes do those comprehensive vocational assessments, vocational evaluations, and again, not knowing what budgets are like, sometimes may have budgets to help with training as well if the person was interested in career retraining. And then also with the handouts that were sent out, there was a link to resources regarding a career change, which brings you to the New York City Southern New York chapters websites, and there are several self-assessments and different types of assessments that clients can check out there too.
Awesome. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 1. Our next question is from Adam.
Mine's just a quick question about, could I get the slides? I signed up at the last moment, and where do I need to go to get those? And another, just real quick, is at the end of what you said about going to your site, about going somewhere to be able to get some information about training, my son came in, like, I don't know, I couldn't hear what he said.
Okay. At the end of the call, Adam, we will be giving you our contact information, and feel free to send an email to one of the three of us, and we'll be sure to send you copies of the slides, and then as well as the link to that career change page through the New York City Southern New York Chapters website where those assessments and the resources are.
Our next question is from Tracy. Tracy, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I was actually curious about transitioning to another career. I feel like my current position has a lot to do with the more health-related symptoms that I've been experiencing with MS, like more progressively happening more frequently. And I'm concerned about the stress level at work, and perhaps other people can relate to that. So in looking at transitioning to another career, I don't want to work less or work less hard, but I'm concerned about how that would look to a future employer. Why do you want to change your job? Why are you looking to leave? I'm not overly unhappy with my job. I just feel like there's too much stress, and it's contributing to poor health. So if you could possibly address that, I'd appreciate it.
When we have a job that's contributing to poor health, I like to encourage people to examine what their skill sets are. What skill set is being used at that job, and where we can use it somewhere else. And if particularly, I just heard that you're kind of happy. It's not like you're dissatisfied with your job. So I would want to capture what you're doing and seeing if it could be done somewhere else. And changing jobs is, when you have a job, is okay. If you're going from a totally different career to a new career, we'd hope that you'd be choosing one that's going to bring you fulfillment once again. And if you can make the case on a cover letter and a resume, which there are ways of crafting that, where you highlight your transferable skill, so when the reader's looking at it, they say, oh, I could see how she's a fit here. You do the work for the reader who's looking at resumes. So I always say to do that kind of self-assessment, what your skill set is, where can it be transferred, and then how could I market it? So when someone's looking at me at another organization or even industry, you've done the work for making yourself look like you belong there. But, you know, once again, I think it's also important to get a market snapshot of what the demands are of another field if you decide to change your field. There's the Job Occupational Outlook Handbook that's in the libraries and online, and they give kind of like these snapshots of different industries. I find that to be kind of helpful as to where the industries are going and what the demands are in education and reskilling. That would be a good book to look at to start.
Our next question is from Sandra. Sandra, go ahead.
I'm just trying to sort out some thoughts. I have the support of my neurologist to stop working. Test results are showing the cognitive issues, and most importantly, have the support from my husband. But I guess I'm a little bit of a fighter and trying to determine if that's the right decision. I don't think I'm going to be a couch potato if I stop working. Do enjoy my job, but feel like work is taking more of my energy than I don't have time with my family or friends. Just any feedback will be greatly appreciated.
Sure. You know, of course, not knowing what the financial situation is and what the perceived adequate income is needed for your household. I mean, some people consider work, if they have the option, to change it into part-time or consultancy, or if you still want to remain working, which I applaud if you can do it, and not be a couch potato, I think you can even consider other professions that maybe would be less taxing or less demanding. And once again, that comes back to assessment and looking at different industries and options. But sometimes taking a step back is a great way of prolonging your work-life continuum. And you know, sometimes people have to deal with pride on that because you feel like you're giving up status or longevity in a certain career. But at the end of the day, the health is first, and your ability to feel a contributing person. It sounds like you want to remain to the work world. So that's kind of the feedback I'd give on that. Hello?
Yes, sir. Our next question is from Priscilla. Priscilla, go ahead.
I've been on disability since 2008. I used to work in a hospital, and I took 4 years since I've been on disability to further my education. I got a degree, and I really want to go back to work. My MS, I do have, like, certain symptoms, and I'm just kind of at a standstill. Like, I don't know how to get back into work and how to possibly change fields. So what would your suggestion be? Like, where could I start from?
Sure. One of the things I didn't hear you mention, but I hear often in this situation, is leaving disability and what does that mean to the benefit? And, you know, since you have been out of the workforce for a couple of years, I often hear, I'm not saying this is your case, but I just wanted to say this because I hear it enough, that there's uncertainty whether or not you could last in the workforce because you've been out of it for so long. So the desire is there strong, but you really don't know what that's like again. But knowing that you've reskilled and got some education sounds like you're off to an awesome start. There's the trial work period. There's a new booklet that came out in 2013. I'll send it to Steve Neeson at the end of this call if he doesn't have it. That kind of goes over the benefits and for people who are on disability and are ready to go back and explore disability and see the impact on their work. I think that's a very important thing to understand right off the get-go. But to start, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but it involves research. It involves reading about industries, reading about trends. I'm not sure where you've reskilled and what you've done, but seeing, you know, whatever you studied, maybe doing a Google search, going to the Job Occupational Outlook Handbook online or in the libraries in the reference section, and trying to understand the market you're looking to enter. And try to look at it that way, because you're somebody looking to enter a market. You're looking to enter the workforce market. And you've been out of there for a little while, so let's see what it's like. 2008, right before the recession. So there were good times before then. So now the work world is a little bit different. So research. I couldn't emphasize that enough. And assessments, online assessment tools are really helpful. Get that objective data as to what your transferable skills are. Plug it into the equation I gave you. Make sure you feel some fulfillment so you can go to work as much as you want to work and leave it feeling like, you know, you earned your pay, but you also feel good about it. Next question.
Oh, John, before we go to the next question, this is Barbara. I'm just going to jump in there and kind of reiterate what
Great.
Steve said earlier about the links that were sent to you and the one on the career change link. That link is actually a guide, and everything John is talking about is on there, all kinds of links for all the assessments, the link to the Occupational Outlook Handbook, the link to ONET, for all career information. There's tons of links, and it also takes you step by step through the whole process of making a career change and all the things to consider in each stage. So, you know, there's the Office of Voc Rehab for someone who's now thinking, I want to get out there and I have new skills. So to the last person that just asked the question, if you feel like you've been reskilled and you're just really ready to get out there, going to the Office of Voc Rehab might be the next step for you. And the link to that is in there as well. So I'd really encourage everyone to take a good solid look at that, because a lot of what John's talking about is actually in there, and there's a lot there to guide you through.
Our next question is from Samantha.
Oh, hi. Actually, all my question has been answered, so you guys can go on to the next caller.
Our next question is Robert. Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm looking at my resume right now, and I've only been out of college since August of 2009, and so I got out and the recession hit hard, and so I haven't been able to find a job, and my resume is looking incredibly, for lack of a better word, schizophrenic. I really want to get into teaching, and I'm actually even looking at going back to get my master's degree to do something like that, but at the same time, I need work to be able to pay for the silly things like, you know, food while I'm studying.
I'm not too sure what the question is. I understand your situation. I'm going to assume that the question is, how do you market yourself to get work when you haven't had much of an opportunity when the recession hit and your resume is looking sparse, which I think that's something I hear often. So I'm going to just extrapolate that from your situation. But what employers like to see is that you're utilizing your time and how you're doing it, and doing it in a productive way. And so filling in gaps with volunteer work and with getting reskilling and looking to go back to school. I always tell folk, I don't know what kind of teaching you're looking for, but I always tell folk, you know, it's always good when you're getting an advanced degree and you want to teach, is look at doing subject area graduate degrees versus a graduate degree in education. It has more value and it's more helpful. But that's just an aside. But you want to make sure you're using your time productively, and that's the biggest thing that people are looking. You use the word schizophrenic to explain what your resume, and quite honestly, many, many others that have graduated during these last couple of years. So It doesn't help to know that you're not alone because it's still a hard situation, but employers are kind of accustomed to seeing resumes that are a little bit all over the place. The best advice I can give is tighten it up as much as possible. If you want to do teaching, for example, make sure you're not volunteering, to save the whales. Make sure you're teaching, you know, volunteering to help a school and help a bunch of kids learn how to read. You know, so align your resume. It may not be a paying job, volunteerism, but choose your volunteerism wisely to your next goal. And it's also a good test environment to really give you experience in a possible work situation. So I always find that resumes and experience can be tightened up a little bit to speak more to the target that they're aiming for. That would be my response.
Our next question is from Laurie. Go ahead, Laurie.
Yes, what would you suggest in terms of finding someone to do the neuropsychological evaluation for any kind of cognitive issues? How best to find that particular type of resource?
Sure. Well, some vocational agencies may offer that service depending on where you live. I think you have to explore maybe some of the links that were offered on the handouts and call those vocational agencies and see if they do that. I know some chapter, I know the MS Society may have an information referral center that keeps a list of neuropsychologists that offer those services. And you also may want to check with, if you have insurance, you may want to check with your insurance provider list to see if they have a list of neuropsychologists. It's been my experience that some insurances don't keep that list, but do reimburse partial or whole on that. It's something you kind of have to ask, even if you don't see it in your brochure. But there's a lot of different resources there. I think the IRC offers them. Am I correct on that, Steve?
Yep, I was just going to say that. We at the National MS Society, we do maintain a service provider database, which has different types of healthcare professionals. The neuropsychologists is one of the categories that chapters do survey professionals and put them into a service provider database. So by calling either your local chapter or calling our toll-free number, the 1-800-344-4867 number, they would be able to do a search through our service provider database and come up with several names and numbers of local neuropsychologists for you.
Our next question is from Cynthia. Cynthia, go ahead.
Well, my questions has been answered, but I had one to speak with Robert since he's going to want to get into the teaching profession and how I got into it. I sub for the schools in my county and everything, and that's how I got into my teaching position. So if he could do that, that helps. And you get paid while you're doing that as well. So I just want to share that, but I don't have no question. Everything has been answered, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Our next question is from Ellen. Ellen, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. I'm working. I've been working for over 30 years in my profession. I have a question. Understand where you are on the work-life continuum. I'm in the maintenance age group. And I know you told me you can't go by age, but I feel like I'm winding down. Can you explain winding down and what it means as what's winding down? You're leaving work? Because I want to leave work. I just can't afford to leave work. I'm stuck doing this job.
Sure, sure. So it sounds like so the winding down stage, the way it's referred to on that continuum means that you are at a job and you're thinking about retirement or exiting and you're not really striving. Maybe you're striving for other goals in your life, but your goals are shifting. Once again, the ever-changing needs assessment that over our lifetime changes depending on where we are. So, and the winding down stage would be just that. So it sounds like you said you're stuck at the job and you need it, but you feel like you're winding down. And that could be an emotional thing. It could be that yeah, you're done, and you're just doing it kind of rot because you just, you know, the adequate income thing. You need the money, but you're not particularly striving to go to another job or another career. You're just feeling like the world of work has played out for you, and that's basically what winding down means.
Our next question is from George. George, go ahead.
Yeah, my question has been answered already. So, thank you.
Okay.
Our next question is from Marcy. Marcy, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I basically have been through so many of the things that you have mentioned. I have not worked now for 8 years because I still had children at home. I am a nurse with a BSN, and I have my master's, and yet I don't seem to be able to find anything that is flexible enough for me. I guess I have done the vocational. I have done the neurotesting. And for the other person that called, I also, if you just go to a community college or one of those programs, they will teach you how to redo your resume. I did that also. So I am in a position right now where I do have to go back to work, and yet I really am finding it difficult in my profession. I'm not quite sure whether to tell people. I mean, it's a profession where, you know, my cognitive ability needs to be right there. A lot of people, I was hired at one point, and the woman I had was hired for a couple of hours, and she went up to 24 hours. So I don't know. I am very frustrated with the system of the computer where you just kind of go round and round, and everybody wants 8 to 12-hour shifts when you get through looking at things. I am going on too long. However, I really, you know, am looking for another avenue, and I guess in many ways it has been answered, but if you have any other suggestions, I would be open to them.
Well, you know, it sounds like you're very well skilled, and it sounds like you're not ready to give up, which I don't encourage. But I would want to explore with you. If you were sitting in front of me right now, I'd want to explore with you what careers you've explored. Where are your transferable skills? Do you have it in you to get more training? Sounds like you have a lot of education. And then I'd want to see how you're presenting yourself. And sometimes, I mean, it sounds like you did some vocational assistance already. Sometimes it could be the interview process or what you're targeting. You know, I haven't mentioned this on the call because it really wasn't the nature of this particular call, but I'll say it because it's helpful. Just make sure your resumes and cover letters are targeted, are specific, and do the work for the reader. It's one of my broken records. Make sure you know where you're sending it. You've done the research on the organization, and you highlight your accomplishments on the cover letter, and the cover letter reads like you wrote it just for them, not these generic cover letters, please see the enclosed resume, or, you know, making the reader figure out what your transferable skills. You have to do the research. Resume writing and cover letter writing, I find, have to be quite specific, and you'll have many, many versions of them. So I just wanted to mention that. I know that's not really the nature of this call tactically, but I think it's helpful.
Our next question is from Vita. Vita, go ahead.
I think you probably mean theater. Not Vita. Just making sure.
Okay.
So I guess my question was sort of answered too, except I'm kind of feel like I'm in a catch-22. I'm in my dream job. I took a break after I had my diagnosis and was living the slower life and building my support network. And I had moved away in order to do that. And out of the blue, I get the call for the ultimate job. And I'm 9 months in it, working the 90 hours a week with crazy fatigue, eating Adderall like it's Tic Tacs, just to be able to focus and get through. I've had really good conversations with my boss, but there are some people around my building that don't understand, like, because they don't, you know, they don't live in this body, so they don't know what I'm dealing. I don't look, quote unquote, sick. So I'm, you know, I wish, you know, technically I should be in the promotion stage, but honestly, I really want to be winding down. And I'm kind of not sure if I'm looking at gift horse in the mouth, because for the last 10 years I wanted this job, and now that it's here, I got what I asked for, I don't know if I can do it anymore. There's not really a question in there, but I just don't know how to reconcile for myself having what I want and knowing that maybe I can't do it.
That's a really good question. And one of the things I would bounce questions back at you is, did you explore all reasonable accommodations for, I only heard one symptom that you really struggle with, which is the chronic fatigue. And did you look to making a formal ask for ways to help manage that in the workplace for your job? That's number one. And I would go to that website for AskJan, AskJan.org, and you'll see every type of symptom with kind of sample types of accommodation requests that you can make. And that's one thing I would ask. Number two, it sounds like that's an emotional thing. So I'll put my therapist hat on for a moment. And, you know, getting to a point where we're at the winding down stage, we have a perfect job, can't do it anymore, but it's what you love, and having to accept and move on. And it goes back to that quitting article, which I encourage you to read. It has a little bit of a spirituality slant to it, in the sense of seeing that you are taking care of yourself and you're saying, I can't do this anymore. But I'm not too sure, though, that I would say, you know, someone like yourself, maybe you can still find something that's maybe one standard deviation to the left of your current job and gives you, you know, 85% or 80% of fulfillment and without the 80 hours a week. You know, there's a lot of different ways that I would want to explore this with you. So I'm not going to give you a clear, like, this is what you should do type of thing, but I would explore reasonable accommodations, askjan.org, a great website. See if you could make it work by being creative in that way with your current situation. And if not, maybe looking to see if you wanted to do something that's one step back while still getting fulfillment and enjoyment. And once again, going back to the length of assessments and figuring out what that would be, which obviously we can't do on the phone. But we have great resources on these handouts for you. So good luck.
Our next question is from Alicia. Alicia, go ahead.
Hi. Yes. Please tell me, I'm interested in the neuropsych evaluation. What does that entail?
So a neuropsychologist would basically meet with you and get, it's a couple of hours generally, and they run scientific psychological tests, if you will, to measure something called like different areas of executive functioning. So in our thinking, we have sequencing, we have short-term memory, long-term memory. Sequencing means how we order and do things in the right order. Do I put my shoes on before I put my socks on? I know that's a real example, but gives you an idea. But they measure things like this, and over a couple of hours, they can do these tests, depending on what test they run. Sometimes if it's exhausting, they'll do it over 2 or 3 days. And then they take about a month, a neuropsychologist, to add up all their data and calculations and create a report that literally measures you in your thinking, in your cognition ability. And it usually takes about, you know, most neuropsychologists get that report back within a month, and then they have a feedback session, and they invite you to come back to meet with them. And some neuropsychologists like to give you the report to read in a reading room and then come back into the session so you can talk through it and ask questions. It can be a little technical. It has recommendations as to what to do next based on where, and it also tells you where your strengths are and where are areas that you could get some, you know, need some support. And sometimes there's a recommendation for something called cognitive remediation, which neuropsychologists like to refer to help strengthen ways to improve your memory or hold on to your ability cognitively that's wavering, but we want to keep it as much as we can. So they make a lot of recommendations. If stress is ample in your life and they feel like you may be a candidate for psychotherapy, they may refer you for that as well. And so they'll examine everything really from the neck up and give it a score. And it really helps, I think, give perspective and objective data. And often it's confirming. And I have to tell you, I hear more times than not, it can be in a little bit of an emotional appointment because, once again, as I said in the earlier part of my presentation, it's often the invisible signs of MS that are hard when it deals with cognition because we don't see it and we'd like to think of ourselves as fully capable. And when we get to that point where we're seeing that we have cognitive issues and they're popping up in our lives, making careless mistakes at work, not remembering things, not being organized, and when you see it on paper, it's a point. I look at it as an opportunity to take care of yourself, another way of collecting objective data. So if you struggle with that and you're not sure and you never really explored it, it's something I would encourage. Next question.
Yeah, I think maybe if we could just take one more question, Alma, because we're just about coming up to the top of the hour.
Yes, sir.
Your last question for the night.
Our final question is from Robin. Robin, go ahead.
Actually, most of my questions were answered. One of the main things is, what type of accommodations for cognitive issues are really out there, and to stay with an organization, and if cognitive ends up being a problem, where do you go? Thank you.
Sure. That's a great question, first off, a very broad one at that. It really depends on the detail and what's needed. And I'll use, obviously, very, very overt examples just to make my point. I mean, if you struggle with memory and details, and you never did before, in organization of details and retention of of specific like data points, being an actuary is probably going to be a hard thing to maintain. But you can look at other areas of work that aren't going to be so, if you will, cerebrally focused, and heavily, there's a functional aspect to that. So you'd want to consider fields that don't have to rely on a certain aspect and maybe of that, cognitive functioning that you may be struggling with. So once again, it's hard for me to answer that question with any more specificity until I hear what area is struggling as opposed to the blanket cognition.
And just to build off of something that you had mentioned earlier, John, Job Accommodation Network is probably one of the best sources for information when it comes to coming up with practical accommodation strategies. So I know you gave their website before, askjan.org. They also maintain a toll-free phone number, which is 1-800-526-7234. And they have listed in some of their publications, and you can definitely talk to somebody over the phone. These are the types of cognitive symptoms that I'm experiencing, or these are the types of symptoms that I'm experiencing in general, and they can help brainstorm some practical accommodation strategies. So that there definitely are the resources out there. Then getting back to your point in terms of do your research, rely on these agencies that really are kind of the experts when it comes to practical accommodation strategies too. So just wanted to give them another plug here.
Yeah, absolutely. Great resource.
Before we close the call tonight, I definitely wanted to, first of all, just thank you, John, for spending the evening with us and sharing this information. Thank you to all of the callers who posed their questions. We definitely wanted to give you our contact information. So, Barbara, I'll start with you.
Great, sure. My email address is B as in Barbara, M as in Mary, CKEON at msnyc.org. 212-453-3218.
Great. And Christina?
Yeah, my email address is Christina, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, dot Forster, S as in Frank, O-R, S as in Sam, T-E-R, at nmss.org. And the phone number is 215-271-1500. Thanks.
Great. And my contact information is steve.nissen, and that's N as in Nancy, I-S-S-E-N. At nmss.org, and phone number is 202-296-5363. So again, John, just wanted to thank you so much for being a part of the call this evening, and really appreciate you sharing all that you did, and thanks so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And if people could just stay on the line, we do have just those six quick polling questions, so... Alma, go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, this begins our polling session. Our first question, are you currently working? Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our second question, how would you rate the speaker? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, 4 for poor. Again, how would you rate the speaker? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor? The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Next question, how would you rate the content of the program? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, 4 for poor. Again, how would you rate the content of the program? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor. The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our next question. As a result of this teleconference, I learned of objective ways to assess my work performance. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. As a result of this teleconference, I learned of objective ways to assess my work performance. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question, as a result of this teleconference, I gained insight into things to consider when trying to decide if I should change careers. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. As a result of this teleconference, I gained insight into things to consider when trying to decide if I should change careers. Press 1 for agree, 2 to agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our final question. Final question. As a result of this teleconference, I gain insight into how to determine if it's time to stop working. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3 disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I gained insight into how to determine if it's time to stop working. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, or 3, disagree. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your polling session. You may all disconnect.